Okay, great. So we're going to get started. We're speaking today about the Illinois milk statute. And there was actually a Mishpacha magazine article that came out this week on the subject, where Rabbi Fishbane was interviewed, and Senator Ivor Silverstein, who was involved with these various efforts. And there's even a picture of me on the front page, which is unfortunate, but otherwise I think it captures at least some of the territory. They did interview me as well. And actually, I mean, I guess I can use that as sort of a springboard for discussion, that in the quotation that they used, I think they spoke to me for a few minutes. I'm not really exactly sure what I said, because they called me at 6 in the morning on Sunday morning, and kind of woke me up out of bed, and I was a little bit woozy at the time, but I think that, right, because he's an Eretz Yisrael, so he had to find a time that worked for him. He had a deadline to meet and wasn't able to reach me before Shabbos. But one thing that he did quote was that you have to watch the changes carefully to make sure the halachic premises under which we are operating are not changed to our detriment. Maybe I said something like that, I guess. But the statement is essentially true. And what I wanted to do today, I said that it's six. It could be cleaned it up a little bit. I honestly don't really remember exactly what I said, but I think that it's an accurate reflection of what I would have wanted to say. So it's perfectly possible that I may have said it. And what I want to speak about today is some of the premises that have been changing, and some of the halachos that are affected as a result. And specifically, in the context of the language that we've been working on, connection with the Illinois milk statute, which is a statute that the rest of the country and kashrus agencies have been watching as well, because it could affect the way in which the hefsher on milk, that's not classical chalav yisrael milk, will be given throughout the country. So I wanted to give a little bit just of a backdrop, which I think is familiar to pretty much everybody, regarding the nature of the concern regarding Chalav Yisrael to begin with, and some of the heterim that have been relied upon when it comes to what's referred to as Chalav Stam in this country, and what the concerns were that have been raised, and how they were addressed in connection with the Illinois milk statute. So there is a halacha, this is expressed in the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Hei Amud Beis, that chalav milk that is not supervised by a Yisrael is asur. It's something which is forbidden. Chalav shechava or mikachavim, if the milk has been milked by an akum, by a non-Jew, and a Jew is not watching the process, then that is included within what is asur, that is prohibited. What is the reason for this isur? So the Gemara explains that the reason for the isur is that we're worried that there's going to be a mixture of the non-kosher milk into the kosher milk, that it won't be sufficiently recognizable. If they would just swap one milk for a different milk, the Gemara indicates that the color of the non-kosher milk would be discernible. So the real concern is that a little bit of non-kosher milk is going to get mixed up into the kosher milk, and you're not going to be able to notice. The Gemara in Bechoras, Daf Vav Amud Beis, is sourced as to how we know that milk from camels, milk from non-kosher animals, is prohibited. So we'll establish as a given that milk from non-kosher animals is absolutely prohibited, as in Issa D'oraisa, Gzeiras HaKasuv, and therefore we have to stay away from it. And since there is this concern of mixture, therefore that requires supervision of any milk that's milked by a non-Jew. So then the Gemara, later on in Lamed Tes Amud Beis, kind of analyzes this from the reverse end of the equation. The Mishnah there says that if milk was milked by an Ovi Tochavim, and a Yisrael supervised the process, then it would be permissible. And the Gemara quotes a Braisa, Yoshev Yisrael B'tzad Edo Shalavi Kochavim, that it's also sufficient if a Yisrael just kind of like sits on the outside of the flock of the non-Jewish farmer. in a choshesh, and the non-Jew is kind of milking away and brings it to him, says, okay, could you please put your heksher on it? And the Jewish mashgiach is kind of like sitting outside, sorry about anything, even though he doesn't observe the actual milking. So the Gemara indicates that if there's idaleka davar tamei be'edro pshita, if there's no non-kosher animal in the farm, then that's obvious that this should be sufficient, indicating this should be sufficient. The question is this necessary? So the Gemara doesn't say one way or another, but certainly it indicates that even if there is no non-kosher animal in the farm, the Jew is still sitting there on the outside. But the Gemara concludes, v'yom de'ika davar tamei. The chiddush is that even though there's a non-kosher, there may be non-kosher animals in the flock, nonetheless it's sufficient if the Jew sits on the outside, as long as he has the ability when he stands up to see the milking. And the chiddush is, k'mashulan, k'vidzuki kai chazile, since when he stands up, the Jewish mashgiach, the CRC person assigned to the farm stands up and he's able to see the milking taking place, see that it's a kosher animal. It's Tuse Mirsas, so the non-Jewish farmer is going to be terrified that maybe the Jewish mashgiach will stand up in any moment in time, v'lom arebe, and therefore will not mix together. Non-kosher milk will not use the non-kosher animals in the farm to produce any milk, and therefore this can be relied upon. And the way in which this is codified in the Shulchan Aruch Kuf Tes Vav in Yoredeia is even Hayelo Dava Tamei Be'edro, even if there are, let's say, camels, non-kosher animals in the flock, where you saw Yoshim B'chutz V'Ovei Kochorim Cholot L'Tzorach Yisrael, the Jew is sitting outside, the Ovei Kochorim needs to know that the Jew is there, because otherwise he won't be scared of mixing it together. Apilu Enu Yachol L'Vosu Kishu Yoshev, even if the Jewish Mashgiach can't see what's going on when he's sitting, Yim Yachol L'Vosu Kishu Omeid, if he can see what's going on as long as he stands up, Mutter, the milk is considered to be permissible, what we would refer to commonly as Cholot Yisrael, Shiyare Shema Yamod V'Yareyu, because the non-Jewish farmer is afraid. Again, this is the idea of Yersusei Mirsas Shiyare, he's afraid that the Jew will see him. Obviously, he has to understand that we have a concern along these lines, and that there are source sheets also, and that he knows that this is something that we do not want him to do. This is also reflected as well, even in the cheese making process, where we say that as a matter of reality, it's impossible to take the non-kosher milk and make it into cheese. At least that used to be true. But the Gemara assumes that you cannot actually coagulate whatever you couldn't take the non-Jewish, the non-kosher milk and turn it into cheese. Strictly speaking, when it comes to Gevinas Yisrael, which also is a separate tzakan, it's a separate requirement that a Jew either participate or watch the cheese-making process. Focus whether it's sufficient to watch, or either he has to also participate in the cheese-making process, but whatever it is, it's sort of a separate requirement with respect to Gvinas Yisrael. Let's say that you participate in the cheese-making process, but this was milk that was not produced under Jewish supervision, so Me'ikar Adin, once you're making it into cheese, if the intention was to make it into cheese, and it was made into cheese, so Me'ikar Adin, it would not be subject to this particular law, because we are not worried that anybody's going to waste their time taking non-kosher milk and trying to make it into cheese, but nonetheless, we're machmir that we don't allow that either, that the milk that's used for the cheese-making process should be Cholov Yisrael milk. Says the Ramah, this is in Simen Kuf Tesvav Sif Beis, Mimrah, Asiyas HaGvinas V'Lovah HaChaliva, if the Mashkiach saw the cheese-making process but did not see the milking process, Yesh Lahatya B'Di'Ebed. We're only make on a B'Di'Ebed level, Kein Lach Hashem Iri Bo Dover Tameh Me'afash Yas HaGvinas V'Nacholov Me'ikar Edim, we're not worried. When it comes to cheese making, we're not worried that they would have used non-kosher milk because it doesn't work. And therefore, that's why, at least b'di'evit, we would consider this to be okay. Again, not l'chatzchila, we only permit this b'di'evit. So I give this just by way of introduction, so we understand the basic landscape when it comes to the laws of Chalav Yisrael, and the laws of Chalav Yisrael as they relate to Gvinas Yisrael, because based on changes in the reality, in the facts on the ground, it could be that we have to revisit any number of these halachos. Now, there are different heterim when it comes to what we refer to Chalav Stam, milk that has not been specifically supervised by a Jewish mashkiach who's on the plant. In fact, the CRC, so I was given a bottle of Dean's milk to present in Springfield when we were talking about the new milk legislation. The CRC gives hashgacha on Chalav Stam, on milk that does not have Jews present at the facility. We also give hashgacha on what we refer to as Chalav Yisrael. But what would be the basis for giving a heter with respect to certifying Chalav Stam? So there are a couple of reasons. We mainly rely upon Rav Moshe Feinstein. And since we mainly rely upon Rav Moshe Feinstein, we're going to focus on Hishita as the main part of our focus. But nonetheless, it's important to understand other shitos too, because they also come into the equation. And one of the first meetings I was invited to, I wasn't able to attend when I first came on board of the CRC, was a giant meeting that took place in New York. It was an ACO convening meeting by Rabbi Fishbane of different poskim relating to milk that comes outside of the United States, especially from India, because even if some considerations of it being mako may relate to United States milk, it less to milk coming from overseas, but it's important to understand all of the different heterim to know which one might be applicable if a particular heter doesn't work. So there's the famous consideration of the pre-chadosh. The pre-chadosh is in Yoredeya Simon Kuftes Vav Stif Katzin Vav. The pre-chadosh is famous for this particular shita. And he writes that we see from the Gemara, that we see that we're not really worried unless there's some concern that maybe non-kosher milk, like milk from a camel, from a non-kosher animal, will be mixed into the kosher milk. Because after all, the Gemara says that when there is no non-kosher animal in the flock, hitiru, they permitted the milk, even though the mashgiach is sitting outside looking at his cell phone. Even though he's not watching the milk at all, but just has the possibility of standing up and actually even there, he doesn't even have to stand up. He just sits outside, and the Gemara says there's no even consideration of mirsa, since there's no non-kosher milk inside. He just has to make sure that no camel is brought into the farm while he's standing there, sitting there, presumably. And therefore, he says that it must be that we're not treating it as an absolute ister. It must be that it's not a low plug. Because if it was a low plug, we would require him to at least stand up and look every once in a while. That it's not considered to be an absolute ister. Unlike, for example, Gvinas Akum, Sharamam assumes that is kind of like a low plug davar shivaminyan, that even if the reasoning wouldn't be applicable, whatever the reason is, that Gvinas Akum is also whatever, if you're going to use non-kosher rennet, whatever it is, but even if the reason is that not applicable, then the issa would still be applicable. So Pichadosh says that is not true with respect to a cholov. It's like a moriyas, which is some kind of like a fish oil that was asr. It's also mentioned in the Mishnayos Avodah Zarah that it's also, but the Gemara there says that if you don't have to worry about anybody mixing in non-kosher wine into the moriyas, then because the wine is very, very expensive, then it would be permissible without supervision. So still too, in Mechalav Tamei Eino Nimsa B'Makom Echad, if there was no non-kosher milk that was found in a particular locale, not only on that farm, but in the entire state of the entire vicinity, Oshinimsa, or even, Pichadish says this explicitly, some are not under the impression Pichadish says this explicitly, but he does, Oshinimsa, or the milk is available, Oshiyote B'Yoke Mechalav, but it is more expensive than the Mechalav Tahor, than the kosher milk, and then you should not, that would not have been the yisur, even though it's not chalav yisrael. In this particular case, chalav stam would be permissible, says the pre-chadosh, yalamutzer, leilet, liknos, mehanoflin. And he quotes the Radbaz, who is similarly Mako, reading a Mordechai, who the Radbaz assumes argues with this halacha, and the Pre-Chadosh tries to claim that even the Mordechai would agree with this, but the Radbaz certainly agrees with the Pre-Chadosh. And he ends up by saying, Haklal Ole,
to the ear. So the bottom line is, if you have a city or it's much more expensive than the kosher milk, because he has no incentive to make the mix, he either doesn't have the availability or the incentive to mix the non-kosher milk. Amsterdam. And he says, here in Amsterdam, that's what they do. And if that's what they do in Amsterdam, that's what we should do in New Amsterdam. Obviously, this should be the halacha, you know, even in the United States, some claim, based on the Pre-Chadosh, V'chein Ahavti, Ani Gam Kein, and this is what I personally have practiced, the Pre-Chadosh, all of 32 years old, when he wrote this during his 1 or 2 year associated in Amsterdam. By the time he was 40, he was already Nifter. But the Pre-Chadosh certainly made a tremendous splash at a young, early age. It only lasted very, very shortly. He left Amsterdam, didn't have nearly as much success in his further travels, but at least he was able to write the Pre-Chadosh, and we take this very, very seriously. Now, there were those who argued with the Pre-Chadosh. The two major arguments against the Pre-Chadosh were, number one, the Ksam Sofer's Yeridea Simen Kuf Zayin, who says, just like Binas Yisrael, we assume it's a Dorash and Esav and Minyan, and it doesn't really matter whether the Tam applies or not. The same is true with respect to Chol of Yisrael, and even if you knew Bevadolf, that the milk was only from kosher animals and 100% kosher, if it wasn't watched by a Jew, if you didn't have a Jewish mashgiach sitting outside of the farm, then it simply is considered to be usher, no questions asked. It's a low plug, it's a davar shebe minyan. That's the Ksam Sofer's objection. The other approach, disagreeing with the Pre-Chadosh, is that of the Beis Meir and the Chachmas Adam, who say that no, it really is based, if you could establish 100% with absolute veracity that this milk is 100% kosher, then it really would be kosher. It's not the Davar Shebe Minyan, it's not something which is usher no matter what. It's just that, Chazal Misakein, that even if you have an infinitesimal chance of a potential far-fetched concern, it's still going to be usher. And even here, there's an infinitesimal chance. Who says that just because the kosher milk is, that the non-kosher milk is much more expensive than the kosher milk, that they'll never mix it together? Maybe you'll have a Meshuggah farmer who doesn't care about the expense. He's a multi-billionaire, and he doesn't care if he loses a little bit of money. He has to buying around from a camel, and he wants to throw it in. So it doesn't matter how far-fetched it may seem, or even if no milk was available in the vicinity. Who knows? Maybe somebody snuck something in when you weren't looking. And therefore, even when it's very, very far-fetched, you have to be machmir. And the Beis Meir goes a step further, and he says, even the Pre-Chadosh. I'm sorry. Rav Meir Posner. So the Beis Meir goes a step further, and he says that even according to the Pre-Chadosh, you wouldn't necessarily always be makel across the board. He says that you need a certain combination of facts, and this is important because what has happened now in the United States has made the hetzer that we're going to quote from Rav Moshe less accessible, but he's made the hetzer from the Pre-Chadosh potentially more accessible. He says, "V'stu ha-baror ta'af l'dvarav," even according to the Pre-Chadosh, "dafka imachalof tameh matzah vimko biyoter mehatar." When was the Pre-Chadosh makel? If, let's say, he said that the non-kosher milk was much more expensive, so why would the farmer have an incentive and mix the non-kosher milk together with the kosher milk? But that's only if he would have the ability to sell the non-kosher milk by itself. But here he says, in our Medina, where nobody buys, who in their right mind would dream of buying pig milk or buying camel milk? Obviously, here, even according to the Pre-Chadosh, since there's nothing else you could do with the non-kosher milk, if there are non-kosher animals, even according to the Pre-Chadosh, you'd have to be worried that it might get mixed in Kedei Lamokwa De'ilu Be'ena in Kona Osa, because if it's just standing alone, nobody's going to buy it. So what's happened in this country is that Dr. Millie Hinkle has come along. Dr. Millie Hinkle, she's a camel milk crusader, and she has developed a company called Camel Milk USA. You go on the web, you can look at it. It looks very idyllic and very beautiful and wholesome, the way that the whole thing is presented. And the argument is that people have not sufficiently appreciated the health benefits of cow milk up until now. That it can help cure autism and diabetes and all kinds of things. You just feed people camel milk and it's like this panacea. And she markets camel milk, even petitioned the FDA, the Federal Drug Administration, to permit camel milk, while traditionally only cow milk could be sold in this country. Now that it's been expanded to other animals, and very significantly, it has been expanded to camels, because it's all done under very watchful auspices, and it's done in a meticulous manner, and it's presented as some sort of a treat that the whole family can enjoy. And therefore now camel milk has become a possibility, and it is possible, even according to FDA regulations now, to sell camel milk in this country. Okay, but camel milk is much more difficult to produce. You get much less per hump. You get much less from the camel than you would get from the cow. It's extremely expensive, costs many more times than the purchase of a milk would possibly cost. However, it is possible to sell it. So therefore, at least according to the Pri Chadash, you may actually be, incredibly enough, in better shape. The camels presumably were always around. I don't know if you always had camels so much in this country, but you certainly had other type of animals in this country. But if you would produce the milk from, say, a pig or something like that, you wouldn't have the ability to sell in this country. Now, if you produce milk from a camel, you do have the ability to sell it. That's the milk which is out there on the market. And it costs much more, and since one would have the ability to sell it, therefore, according to the Pri Chadash, since it is much more expensive, one doesn't have to worry about the possibility of mixing the camel milk into the kosher milk, so one might be better off according to the Pri Chadash. There are those, in general though, the attitude and the reaction to the Pri Chadash was very virulent, was very vociferous in terms of the opposition. The Aruch HaShulchan makes a sobering note that he says that all Gzeiras Chachamim, which he assumes would include this Gzeira of milk, Levat Taimim Hanigla Yesh Or Habe Taimim Kimusim Shlo Gilu Osam, that there may be all kinds of other reasons other than the concern about the mixture of the non-kosher milk with the kosher milk. I saw somebody quote from an article that someone wants to suggest maybe in the back of their minds they had a concern for Hiskatnus, that you're going to marry the little Hinkle children or something, that there might be other reasons why one has to be machmir. And he tells this very riveting story, and this is in the second paragraph of the Aruch HaShulchan Siman Kuf Tes Vav. I think it's in Sif Vav over there, the second paragraph in the materials. He says, I have to tell you how the words of our sages are like coals of fire. That somebody confessed to me that he used to go to various cities and they would found an innkeeper and they would drink this milk drink. It was like this fatty milk drink called cappuccino, Starbucks, whatever. They would not Starbucks for the record, but they would drink with this, and it was a kiosk of all things, and they would have this fatty milk drink that they were drinking, and they loved it and they thought it was amazing, but they couldn't understand how this person had so much milk when in his farm where he lived there really weren't so many cows available. So they all decided they're going to ask the innkeeper, where do you get this gewaltic milk from that you're able to serve us this amazing cappuccino? So the Chanvani said, I buy these cow brains, okay? I buy pig brains. I buy camel brains. And I buy these brains from animals, and I mix them together, and I melt them together, I cook them together with milk, and I mix it all together, and cook it all together, and it's amazing! And that's how you get this amazing milk drink. So everybody has nafukulam apaneim, they all collapsed in horror, alchetam agadol, they all clapped alchet, and they realized how amat shikog, that kamagidolim dimei chachamim, how much they need to have greater respect for Dibbei Chachamim. So this was just kind of like a sobering story to understand, to underscore the importance of not being so mekel when it comes to these inyanim, that you always have to worry about the specter that there might really be something wrong with the milk if it's not adequately supervised. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein came along and said, we don't have to necessarily rely upon the Prichadish to be Matir Chol of Stam, because it could be that our Chol of Stam is not really Chol of Stam, but it's really Chol of Yisrael. Because what was it that we were worried about? We were worried, what was the heter based upon when you have the Jewish Mashkiach sitting outside of the farm, even though he's not watching anything, that he might stand up at any point in time and be able to watch, in which case there's going to be a Mirsas factor. They're going to be fearful of him. So he says, that's true of all of the milk that's sold in this country. Why? Because there are laws of the country, that the country promulgates laws that it's prohibited and you're subject to fines, subject to a loss of license if you should mix together non-kosher milk with the milk from the cows, from the kosher animals. Says Rav Moshe, Yeridei Chelak Aleph Siman Mem Zayin, Bedova Kolav Shel Companies from the Dinasenu, Shel Yesh Pikuach HaMemshala, V'Mierbu Kolav Eim Atzmeya Yonshu, they're going to be punished, V'Yam Yaskilu Asa Esek Shalem, they might even have to close down the whole farm and the whole factory, Shel Chen Vadai Mirsasi, they're definitely going to have this element of mirsas, of fear. And this is the notion of anansadi. We have an anansadi that because we know that they're going to be so fearful of mixing together the non-kosher milk with the kosher milk, because it is against the law, therefore this is considered to be like an anansadi, it's considered to be like it's an actual ri'ah, as if we're actually sitting there, because they're going to be so scared. Discovery, we don't have to physically sit there, it's considered as if we're sitting there, and therefore it's as if there is supervision, and that's the reason why the milk should be kosher. But Moshe, of course, said about nefesh should be machmir, Sefer Tshuva said that the B'nai Tolan and Yeshiva should be machmir, ideally, but he said in he said that I'm machmir for myself. The reports are that Rav Moshe was not machmir for his family. He held that miyikar hadin, it was completely mutter to drink the chol of stam, the regular milk in this country, because there is an element of mirsas. And he says towards the end of the tshuva, the next tshuva in Siman Memches, Shabbat Devi Shul is the bold part. Shabbat Devi Shul mirsas midinim memshel apishul onish katan lo yarek. Even if it's only a small slap on the wrist punishment, Rav Bachim Yavo ate the problem by the yikum imenu a license, because if he's going to do this, he risks such a severe loss. Why would anybody take a risk of losing their license? And he also says that he would have to bribe all of the workers in order to violate the law of the Medina. And since it's kind of like a combination of mirsas and umdana, that they're not going to do it because it's just going to be so incredibly costly to violate the law in any way. So therefore, there is this anansadi. And then Rav Moshe also speaks about and Shuva Memtes, how even though there is no that when it comes to the actual dairy farms where the milk is produced as opposed to the companies, they don't have the same governmental supervision. Nonetheless, he has this other chiddush, which he says is that the whole prohibition was only kishabali yad yisrael, only when it's kind of like the milk is at the last stop before it's going to be sent to the Jewish consumers, and therefore as long as there is this pikuach memshola and mirsas when it comes to the company, even if it doesn't exist with respect to the farm, then that's considered to be good enough in order to endow it with chol yisrael status. Although the Chelkos Binyamin, in his critique of Rav Moshe, says he doesn't quite understand what in the world that means, or how in the world he can justify that distinction. Rabbi Avram Gornemer of the OU says that today it's completely the opposite, that when it comes to the supervision that takes place in the companies, they're mostly testing for bacteria and things like that. They're not necessarily testing for other types of milk that are mixed in with the milk product, even though presumably they would discern it based on their other tests, and if they did discern it, the people could get into a lot of trouble. When they're doing most of the testing, that is on the actual dairy farms itself, as opposed to at the plant. So he says that even if you don't like this thorough of Rav Moshe, things are actually better nowadays. But things could really be a lot worse, because now that the FDA has permitted the sale of the camel milk, and it's perfectly legal and perfectly hunky-dory that you can go around selling camel milk, so do you have the same type of mirsas of mixing in, that if you knew that you had a Jewish mashgiach outside, maybe who cared about the camel milk, so that's a certain type of mirsas. But if it's a general mirsas of getting in trouble with the Medina, so maybe the Medina doesn't care if you use camel milk. If everything is perfectly fine, camel milk, cow milk, it's all, you know, one, you know, live and let live. We believe in diversity, that everything is equally legitimate, moral relativism, whatever. Why should there be any particular concern that someone's going to get caught if the camel milk is just as legitimate as the cow milk? So the way in which this has been dealt with up until now is based on the labeling requirements. That there are very strict labeling requirements under the pasteurized, the federal grade A pasteurized ordinance. You can find the relevant excerpts in the materials over here, which is the further reading section. That's on page 5 at the bottom. And the labeling ordinance that is binding upon all milk manufacturers says as follows. All bottles, containers, and packages containing milk or milk products, except milk tank trucks, storage tanks, and cans of raw milk from individual dairy farms, shall be conspicuously marked with the common, and it gives a few different labeling requirements, and one of the labeling requirements is that even if you're using anything which is not cattle milk, which is not from cows, then it has to be conspicuously marked with the common name. The statute doesn't read well from a syntax perspective, but that's not something that I can be blamed for. The common name of the hoofed mammal producing the milk shall precede the name of the milk or milk product when the product is or is made from other than cattle's milk. As an example, goat, sheep, water buffalo, or other hoofed mammal, milk or milk products respectively. So that if they were going to sell any kind of milk product, for example, that had camel in it, it would have to say other hoofed mammal milk, or something like that. And it would therefore, besides just looking very, very weird, it would alert the kosher consumer or anybody that, ooh, other hoofed mammal milk. This must be something that might be a real serious concern from my perspective, because maybe other hoofed mammal milk is actually camel milk and therefore would be prohibited. And if the labeling requirement is violated, all of the consequences that were described by Rav Moshe, that the people could get into trouble, that they could lose their license, all of these things would still be pertinent. So one question, of course, that arises is, well, according to the lashon of the statute, all bottles, containers, and packages, maybe that means only that the labeling requirement is applicable only if what they are selling is completely camel milk or completely some sort of a non-kosher milk. But what if it's essentially cow milk with just a little bit of a camel milk that is included within? So all of the experts, and I had this discussion with public health experts here in Illinois, Rabbi Gordimer has discussed this on every single federal and state level that he's been able to, everybody confirms that the language is intended to encompass any kind of admixture of non-kosher milk. And in fact, it's even mukrak that way from the lashon that it says all bottles, containers, and packages containing milk or milk products, okay, would seem to indicate that this is applicable to any milk or milk products that are contained within, and it needs to state the name of the milk or milk product that would seem to pertain to any milk product that is contained within the bottle, container, or package. I think that it's pretty clear that is how the statute is understood. And therefore, there is still the argument, according to Rav Moshe, that you would have this factor of mirsas, that there is some sort of a supervision, that people know that this is something which is prohibited. If it would not be prohibited, then you would only have the pre-chodesh to rely upon, and it's simply impractical and incredibly unlikely that anybody would do this. But since we are generally koshesh for those who disagreed with the pre-chodesh, our preferences and our hashkacha is based upon the reliance on Rav Moshe's Heter. So therefore, it's very important to us that it be understood by all the milk companies when they are producing this milk that it really is prohibited for them. Even if they could sell camel milk on its own, it's prohibited for them to sell any kind of admixture of kosher and non-kosher milk unless it's very carefully labeled. Just like if they would sell camel milk on its own, it would have to be very carefully labeled.
So, but the law specifically excludes when it comes from the farmer?
We're going to get to that in a moment with respect to the raw milk, okay?
I'm not talking about raw milk. I'm talking about when I'm a company that uses milk, the person who sends it to me has no labeling requirement that his truck has to say what kind of milk it is.
Okay, so he didn't know the truck.
And I buy the milk, I buy the milk believing that it's cow's milk.
Who's I, though?
The company or the person? Take something out of it.
No, but he's going to get into trouble because we're
doing labeling. No. Okay. First of all, this is applicable even to. No. This is applicable, so let me clarify. This law is applicable to farmers to the extent that they take any of their milk and they ship the milk to the companies. Any milk which is shipped to the companies is subject to these requirements.
No, but ship it in a tank. I ship it out in a tank full of milk. I don't have to label it as anything. If I put camel milk into it, I can sell it to you. I don't have to write that as other cooked animals. I can just sell milk. I can do a tank full of milk.
If you put it in the tanks, I don't know which part of the statute you're referring to. If you put it in the tanks, then you are supposed to label it.
All bottles have except milk tank trucks. So the truck company
is going to have to verify.
But there's no government paying attention to that.
Why not?
You do it, but I don't have to tell you what you have to do. I don't have to tell you what kind of milk it is.
If the short number is not going to put camel milk on it, they're going to get into trouble, so they're going to have to verify for
First of all.
Who puts the label on?
No. Who has the dairies?
No.
There are separate parts of the statute that relate to the labeling requirements with respect to the milk tank trucks and the raw milk and so forth, okay? And if I recall correctly, the exemptions apply mostly or apply exclusively to cases where the milk is going to be sold on the farms itself. And you're correct that there are exclusions when it's sold on the farm itself. But anything which is going to be shipped for purposes of going to the companies and being subject to pasteurization has to be subject to labeling requirements.
Okay,
right. So this is, because there's sort of a separate regime and there's a separate statute for that, and I have it, in the materials because that relates to the whole raw milk controversy, but we'll get to that a little bit later on, okay? And we can talk about that statute, I'll read you the language. Milk tank trucks transporting raw, heat-treated or pasteurized milk and milk products to a milk plant from another milk plant, receiving station, or transfer station are required to be marked with the name and address of the milk plant or hauler and shall be sealed. In addition, for each such shipment, a shipping statement shall be prepared containing at least the following information. And it goes on and gives
That's a pitch
right. Right.
So if I send raw milk.
Raw milk is not subject to these requirements.
Right. So if I send raw milk to, and the truck company deals with it, I didn't have to tell them what kind of milk. I could have put camel milk into it. And they innocently assume that it's camel milk. And they label it innocently.
Right. But if it turns out that they made a mistake and they didn't label it accurately, then they are subject to fines and they are subject to all of the disciplinary action.
The truck company. Yeah, if I could use the word, think that it's a big even a person that is coming as camel's milk.
The point is that that defect, or that aspect of the statute, independently existed before there was any camel milk being produced anywhere. Okay? Meaning.
If the government says that you can't sell it unless you tell people what it is, if it had to do with the production of it, then that was for everybody. Anybody who produces milk, if you sell it any other camel milk, you have to tell us.
That's correct.
But if it's just a labeling thing, and the label specifically let him off the hook, so he didn't have to tell anybody, so he was like, hey, I didn't do anything wrong. And the truck company thinks like the precautors. It never even occurred to them. They just have a camel. I mean, they just obviously getting camel, so they didn't even look
the
for
truck,
it. So there's nobody.
The company that's producing any pasteurized milk that they're selling, okay, talking about milk companies that are producing milk that we're buying, in the shelves, that's produced this milk.
they have an obligation to label anything that is not cow milk, okay, as not being cow milk. So therefore, whatever drisha l'chakira they need to do in order to do that labeling, that's part of their requirement. But the point is, they can get into trouble if it's not properly labeled.
But there's been no drisha. In truth, there's been no drisha l'chakira. They couldn't, it never even occurred to them.
And the government doesn't do
that. No, who's paying, who's hearing, no one's looking at it. The guy who sold it to me, the guy who knows whether it's fake, he doesn't have to tell me. In, my word, he doesn't have to tell me.
In order to protect ourselves with the fear of Moshe, we have to think what will happen if a lawyer stands up in court and says, nobody did anything wrong here. This guy that sent it wasn't required to do anything to label it. And
right.
The guy that received it, you can argue that the law, milk, is defined as camel milk also. And that's where we started the whole conversation. Does that take away that nonsense?
Somebody did fraud it.
Right.
No one did fraud. Somebody did it.
Let's work with the assumption right now.
That's what the camel doesn't have to tell you. He didn't have to tell you because the guy was in the receiver was expecting to get the camel milk. He didn't ask.
He didn't bring any more by you.
Come on. The guy's in some camel milk. You didn't ask before camel milk. It's so idiotic. It's so ridiculous.
In other words, the companies have to build it. Let me just say this. I want to move on. The companies have to ensure their own safeguards, okay, in terms of being able to meet this labeling requirement. But at the end of the day, they have this labeling requirement. It's a matter of law. If you have this obligation upon you, whatever kinds of defenses you're going to bring, if there's a criminal trial, you're going to have to bring those defenses. You can be charged for violating this law. Therefore, they have to put in whatever protections they put into place in order to make sure that they don't violate this law. In fact, we don't have any instances that we know about. And this is very important as well, because it's related to the whole analysis with respect to the internationally, sold milk from India and all these other places. We don't have any instances of violation where anybody actually violated the law, was caught violating the law. So obviously, they're putting into effect all of the, protections that they're supposed to put into effect. The reality is that according to the books, it still is a crime for this to happen. I'll tell you, though, what the problem was with the Illinois statute. What happened in the Illinois statute is that once it became permissible due to Dr. Millie Hinkle and others to sell and manufacture camel milk, what happened in the various states is that where they had their statutes regulating the sale of milk, they expanded the definition of milk. So what happened was, if you take a look at the Illinois milk statute, okay, the original statute simply stated that milk, as regulated in the state of Illinois, means the milk of cows or goats and includes skim milk and cream. That's the whole thing. Cows, goats don't present a problem from our perspective. But once camel milk became in vogue, they amended the statute, or they made a proposal. The amended statute actually already passed. It was already there on the books for over about a year already. And they amended it to state milk means the milk of cows, goats, sheep, water buffalo, or other hooved animals, and includes skim milk and cream. What we were mostly concerned about was not the whole lumpness about whether water buffalo is a kosher animal, but the or other hooved animals, the lines that said or other hooved animals, which of course could include hooved animals which are not split-hooved animals, which are like camels. And since it was specifically actually drafted in order to include the camels, what concerned us about this language is that for the milk manufacturer here in Illinois, it was not clear necessarily that once that you're allowed to produce all of these other types of milk, that at least one looking at the statute, whether it's a milk manufacturer or whether it's a kosher agency like the CRC, it's not abundantly clear looking at the statute that there is still a law in place that makes it prohibited to mix together
the milk from the hoofed animals with the milk from the cows. And if it's not abundantly clear, then there's no longer this reassurance of the shita of Rav Moshe that is a mirsus, which is built in, that people would be afraid of mixing them together. Even if it would be impractical, a la pre-chodosh, there wouldn't be this mirsus anansadi, the yidia kareu kareia idea of Rav Moshe. So therefore, what we propose to do, and our Kashrut staff was very good at even drafting a whole speech to be presented and so forth, was to go back to the original statute. So we petitioned Ira Silverstein, and we made a little, and we went down to Springfield. I went down personally to Springfield in order to sell the argument that here in Illinois, who really cares about camel milk? It isn't the kosher consumer much more important than, you know, enabling people to drink camel milk anyway. That's not exactly the way we put it. But if nobody really cares so much about camel milk, maybe you can sell camel milk as not part of the definition of milk. Maybe you'll call camel milk something else, but don't call it milk, because once you're calling it milk, so then that allows for the possible interpretation that you could just mix together all kinds of milk and will still be milk. So we wanted to go back to milk. It means the milk of cows, goats, sheep, water buffalo, and includes skim milk and cream. The truth of the matter is that what we really wanted to say was just go back to cows and goats, but the way in which the statute was presented, at least in the Senate, was cows, goats, sheep, water buffalo, and taking out other hoofed animals that includes skim milk and cream. When I went down there, the Department of Public Health officials said, we can't do that, because we need to be consistent with the FDA statute, and we want to make sure that to the extent the camel milk is sold and manufactured anywhere, and the truth of the matter is we weren't looking to deprive the Millehinkle people of camel milk, if, you know, especially if they're not the non-kosher consumer. So we're not looking to oppress the non-kosher consumer. They're entitled to drink camel milk if they should want to drink camel milk, arguably. But in any way, that's not our battle. But the when it comes to the but when it came to the concern of the Department of Public Health, they were worried that it that to the extent the camel milk would be sold, if it wouldn't be folded into the statute and into the definition, it wouldn't be subject to the regulation in general, and therefore there might be all kinds of violations that would be allowed in terms of the treatment, the handling, the manufacture of camel milk, and therefore it was very, very important to them that it be included within the definition once the camel milk is already being sold through Camel Milk USA and other suppliers of camel milk. So what I negotiated with them was that we just put very explicitly in the statute the same reassurance that we have anywhere in the country, that even though camel milk is being sold, it remains a violation to mix together the camel milk with the kosher milk based on the labeling requirements of the federal statute. Drafted hastily on the spot was a parenthetical saying, provided that there is compliance with the labeling requirements set forth in the Grade A Pasteurized Milk Ordinance of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. When it came back to my desk a week later from the Senate, after they had kind of tweaked the language a little bit, was not exactly the way that I had drafted it. What they wrote was that milk means the milk of cows, goats, sheep, water buffalo, or other hoofed animals, provided that it is labeled in accordance with the current Grade A Pasteurized Milk Ordinance. I didn't like the word provided, because what I wanted was some sort of terminology that made it clear that it still is a violation of some sort if you would mix together the camel milk with the cow milk, and provided somehow wasn't, at least in my mind, as strong as I would have liked it to be in terms of making it clear that it is a violation if you are not going to comply with the labeling requirements. So I added two words, and I added the words, this is in letter F, that provided that it must be labeled in accordance with the current Grade A Pasteurized Milk Ordinance. So the must be was accepted by the Senate. It was considered to be acceptable to the Department of Public Health. And this way, we were able to get in that compliance idea, because it seems to me that, according to Rav Moshe, that's just a very important theme in terms of the heter, that it be very clear that it's something which is usher. So you have to have some kind of language that says there has to be compliance, that it must be done this way. So that was the language that was finally agreed upon. Then came along the raw milk lobby. The raw milk lobbyists, who are very, very vocal and very ferocious lobby, according to one description that was expressed to me. And in fact, they had recently passed legislation in Illinois, even though it was the case for a long time that raw milk could not be sold at all, and that it was even considered to be criminal to sell raw milk. They now have officially passed the law, or they've gotten it at least passed the Senate, and is going through its final stages, that it now is officially okay to sell raw milk, at least from the dairy farms itself, and that's part of the statute itself. If you take a look at I do have it here. It's letter C. By unanimous vote of 109-0, wow, Senator Representative Peter Breen's bill has passed the Illinois House. The legislation allows the sale of unpasteurized milk at farms. Sale of unpasteurized or raw milk have been occurring in Illinois under a decades-old statute, but due to more recent changes in state law, raw milk sales have been inadvertently made illegal. Because current law provides misdemeanor criminal charges for raw milk sale, Illinois residents have been forced into underground transactions to purchase the milk. Think of like bootlegs. This legislation would remedy the defect in current law and allow individuals to purchase and sell raw milk in the open. The bill now moves to the Illinois Senate. So they actually did frame legislation, which just very recently has been passed, perhaps in the House, which would allow for the sale of raw milk. So the raw milk lobbyists came to me and they said, well, we're worried that statute, since it incorporates now the Grade A Pasteurized Milk Ordinance, and the Grade A Pasteurized Milk Ordinance only applies to pasteurized milk, maybe by incorporating this language in the legislation, it will imply that raw milk is not permissible, that the milk only includes the sale of pasteurized milk and not unpasteurized milk. So I said, no problem. We'll just add in that milk also includes raw milk. So they said, well, let us take a crack at this. So they took a crack, that's letter G over here, which says that there's a requirement that any milk, even if it's from hoofed animals, must be labeled in accordance with the pasteurized milk ordinance, with the exception of unpasteurized milk sold in accordance with Section A of this Act. So I said, why should you have an exception when it comes to labeling? Let's say you're going to sell the raw milk on the farm. Why shouldn't you label the fact that it's camel milk as opposed to cow milk? So why don't we just change it? And I changed it to letter H, since your concern is that raw milk will be excluded altogether, just change it to say that, just like we're adding skim milk and cream, we're also adding an unpasteurized milk sold in accordance with Section 8 of this Act, that's also subject to the definition of milk without explicitly excluding it from labeling requirements, and they seem to be okay with that. So that was the final version of the statute that was passed. That was amendment number 3. It was passed on April 29, 2015. According to the website, it has now been referred to the Human Services Committee. I have no idea what that is. As of May 11, 2015, and now I guess it's going to go through discussions in the House. So we're not done yet. And we're not done yet in part because the raw milk lobby is still insisting that they're worried about the language in its current form, because the language still implies that they might be subject to the labeling requirements of the federal statute, and the federal statute explicitly carves out raw milk which is sold on the dairy farms. I don't know why it carves out raw milk which is sold on the dairy farms, but it does, and they say it's very, very important. They need to be able to sell the raw milk on the dairy farms without all of these strenuous requirements. They're trying to draft their own internal set of labeling requirements that will apply only to raw milk, but it's important that there not be the impression that it applies to the federal statute. I think you could argue that to the extent that the federal statute is referenced and things there must be labeling in accordance with the federal statute, that means that those products that must be labeled in accordance with the federal statute must be labeled that way, and those that don't have to be labeled according to the federal statute don't have to be labeled that way. However, this matter I don't think has been completely put to rest with respect to the raw milk, but it's very, very interesting because to the extent that the argument had been made that now the supervision of the government is even better than when Rav Moshe described it, because when Rav Moshe was describing it, oh, it was only at the companies and not at the dairy farms, and now it's at the dairy farms. Well, what supervision is taking place at the dairy farms? If the dairy farms are allowing for the sale of camel milk and are saying you don't even have to be subject to the labeling requirements on the dairy farms itself, getting back to Rabbi Cohn's point
then maybe that makes the situation even worse. If that's the type of governmental oversight that we're relying upon, somebody will say, well, look, here I am, you know, producing camel milk and mixing camel milk together with other milk, and I'm not labeling it, and they can do it right in front of the federal inspector, say, that's okay, as long as it's raw milk. So maybe then the answer is, okay, we're still in good shape as long as we're not selling raw milk, as long as we're not giving the hashgacha on the raw milk. So one possible solution, and we discussed this with the OU as well, with Rabbi Gordimer, is to make it clear that if they are going to carve out the raw milk from the labeling requirements, that it be very clear this is raw milk that is sold at the dairy farms itself, but does not apply to any other part of the process, because the labeling requirements do say that if you are shipping the raw milk for pasteurization purposes, that it is subject to the labeling requirements, that it is subject at least to the statute of the pasteurized milk ordinance. So that's something which we're still going to have to be vigilant about. But what's very interesting is that it also changes another mitzvah, because maybe it makes things better from another angle. There's the tshuva of the Minchas Yitzchak that I have over here, and that's tshuva on Chelek Yud Siman Samach Zayin, in which he questions the whole basis for giving a hashgacha on milk altogether once it goes gone through the pasteurization process, because the pasteurization process heats up the milk to high temperatures of 170 degrees. So isn't that a problem of a bishul akum? We're not, you know, explicitly participating in the process, so why isn't that a problem of a bishul akum? So ultimately he says, well, b'di'evid, you could rely upon the fact that it's steaming and it's not cooking, and maybe steaming is like smoking, and number two, maybe since it's in factories, so we have the maritats that says that anything that's in a factory, you don't know the person. It's not like it's not like you're going to become acquainted with the Hinkle family and at the Camel USA farm. So if it's being done in a factory, you don't have to worry about his scotness. But the Minchas Yitzchak concludes that he's not crazy about these heterim, and he says that if it's possible to have a Jew be the one who engages in the pasteurization process, that's what should be done. He was writing this to various rabbanim in Brooklyn, and he brought, however, the what would have been the most obvious heter, that which the Rambam says in Hilchos Machos Asuos, that milk's not a problem when it comes to bishul akum, because you could drink milk raw. But he says that mikomakom yesh lama dedayin adava tali b'metzius, that that's not necessarily true just because it was true in the Rambam's day. They're very, very makbid not to drink raw milk, because they consider to be raw milk to be raw milk dangerous, and raw milk to be a cause of sakana. So once raw milk is dangerous, then you can't rely upon that heter, and he's not so crazy about the other heterim that we rely upon every single day. So it could be that the ferocity of the raw milk lobby actually is advantageous to us in this one respect, because now that raw milk has been officially acknowledged as something which is perfectly legitimate and can be sold under Illinois law, so once it's already looked at in that fashion, so you can say, oh, what do you know, it really is Nechol Chai, and now we don't have to worry about the Bishul Akum problems, even on a Lechatzchilo or Mitzvah Minamukher level when it comes to raw milk. Yes?
Isn't Illinois subject to the FDA's rules?
It is subject in general. So the whole the truth of the matter is, this whole exercise, you can argue, was liyetzer seis, meaning that even if we would not have made the amendments to the Illinois statute, the reality is that it was anyway subject to the federal statute. What we were concerned about is that when we looked at it with our own eyes, we said, oh, it looks like now all milk can just be lumped together because everything is defined as milk, and we were worried if that's the way we look at it, then it's possible that this is the way that others might look at it as well, including the milk manufacturers. And that was the argument that I made on the floor of the Illinois Senate, or the Senate Committee, that there's a concern, since the whole basis for our giving hashgacha is this idea of mirsas, of Moshe. So mirsas, it has to include a knowledge that you would be violating the law if you mix together the camel milk with the regular milk. And if the statute creates any ambiguity, I'm sorry?
They don't know the PMO, they have to.
But if the statute on the state level creates any ambiguity whatsoever, so we just want to be able to resolve, but we want to be able to overcome that ambiguity. And that's why it's helpful to include language. Do we think that if we would not
have included the language that would have meant that all the milk would be also. No, in the same way that we're not saying that all the milk that was sold within the last year after the statute had already been trafed. We don't believe that. But we do believe that it's certainly better to have this language just to make it very, very clear. And this way it also alerts all the authorities out there that this is something that, you know, we really care about, and it'll, and therefore if it's something that we really care about, so that hopefully also creates a heightened awareness on the part of all of the milk companies, so that if it turns out that they took from a dairy farm some milk which turned out not to be kosher milk, and they would want to make this defense, oh, well, we couldn't have known any better because they didn't have this labeling requirement, it was just us, so they'll realize, no, no, there are people out there who care, and therefore you have a greater responsibility to ensure that the milk that you're selling is appropriately labeled, even if not everybody before you had that labeling requirement. It's a response to what Rabbi Cohen has said beforehand. So therefore, the fact that we're introducing this language, I think, makes it much better to overcome these concerns. It doesn't mean that the concerns completely go away, and that's why we really have to, you know, constantly be cognizant of what's going on out there in the world, whether in terms of the sale of camel milk, whether in the sale of raw milk, and so forth, because it can affect the halakhic landscape, you know, bein l'kula, bein l'chumra. The other thing that I'll add is that Rabbi Fishbein came up with this, a very interesting article, which was hard to read, but apparently there's somebody out there who developed a, I don't know, an enzyme or something called FAR/M, farm is the way that it reads, which enables you to actually produce cheese from camel milk. This is an article in a newsletter, the Dairy Reporter newsletter. Somebody named Kerr Hansen, or some company named Kerr Hansen.
Chris Hansen.
So Chris Hansen apparently has figured out how to use this special enzyme in order to take camel milk and produce camel cheese through the camel milk. And if that's the case, then this metzias that we always had up until now, which is mentioned by the Rama in Siman Kuf Tes Vav, we assume that non-kosher milk can't become cheese, and therefore nobody would dream of using non-kosher milk if they had the intention of using cheese. So even if it was not Chol Yisrael, even if it was not properly certified milk, but it was eventually used for cheese, so b'di'evid, that would be okay. And Rav Moshe writes in Chelek Gimel Siman Tes Zayin of Yeridea that even though he encourages one to be machmir, l'chatzkila, bal nefesh, to be machmir, when it comes to Chol Yisrael, so he says that if you have gvina that used milk that was not Chol Yisrael, so there I would say that for sure even a bal nefesh doesn't have to be machmir, because lo shayach afilu lebali nefesh v'hosif trei chumri b'alma afilu b'yisrin d'arais in achamurim, because it's like trei chumri. Number one, you're being machmir about the milk in the first place that doesn't really require supervision because it's governmental supervision, and number two, you're being machmir when it was used for cheese, and really miyikar adin, you don't have to worry if it was used for cheese because there's no chance of making cheese from non-kosher milk. But now, if the reality has changed, that there really is a possibility of making cheese from non-kosher milk in this day and age. So besides, you know, revisiting the B'di'evet of the Ramah, I'm not getting into right now, but the L'chatzkila of Rav Moshe, to the extent that Rav Moshe had this L'chatzkila for Bali Nefesh only with respect to the milk, but not with respect to the cheese, so that would need to be revisited as well, because it could be then that the L'chatzkila for Bali Nefesh, be Machmir, with respect to Chol Yisrael, would be extended, according to Rav Moshe, even to cheese, Gvinat Yisrael, that was not made from Chol Yisrael milk. So that's just something to bear in mind as well. But this is just by way of illustration of all the things that have changed and all the halachos that can change based on the changes on the ground in the current landscape. Number one, that relying upon Rav Moshe, we have to be more careful about in order to ensure that the laws really remain very rigorous when it comes to the mixing of the non-kosher with the kosher milk. Number two, with respect to the pre-chadosh just got better. If in fact the non-kosher milk ends up is much more expensive to mix together with the kosher milk, according to the base mayor, if the pre-chadosh only applies when one is able to sell the non-kosher milk independently, well now, what do you know? You actually can sell the non-kosher milk independently. Number three, in terms of the supervision on the farms that Rav Moshe talks about,
that we have to make sure that the governmental supervision really is making sure that there isn't this admixture, that the combination of the governmental supervision and the laws and on the ground is making sure that there won't be this admixture of kosher milk with non-kosher milk. And number four, with respect to the cheese which is produced from non-Kalvi soil milk, that there now is more of a concern on the ground that there is a possibility of producing cheese from non-kosher milk, and therefore the same type of latitude that Moshe had provided in the past might have to be re-examined. And we will keep you posted with respect to any new developments with respect to the Illinois law.